Hey, everybody. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast from Forest City North Church. We're a church in London, Ontario. And our hope is that this message that you're listening to will have an impact on your life. I encourage you to grab a coffee, make yourself a tea, sit back, and enjoy this message. So for the next few minutes, what I would like to do is kind of dive into the Easter experience in a way that maybe will help us understand how important it is to look at it from a different perspective and understand how it is life-changing. But before I get to that, some of those thoughts, a few weeks ago, I was driving around our city, and I was listening to a talk show. I feel like I've crossed that line where I no longer listen to music in my car. I listen to talk show hosts. And one of the hosts was talking about the noises that we hear every day. You know, it was an interesting conversation because when you think about it, there are noises. There's noises like car noises and noises at a cafe, and they weren't talking about those particular noises. They weren't even talking about bodily function noises. They weren't even talking about that. What they were talking about was noises that come from our technology. I had never thought about this before. I'd never really looked at it this before, but they were talking about the dings, the chirps, the bells, the whistles that go off from our technology. And there was a whole conversation geared around it, and I was quite fascinated by it, and I had never really thought about it before through this lens, but it's true when you think about it. Each and every one of us are surrounded by these noises. They are part of our everyday lives. Tease this out for me for a second. Just think about it through this lens. Think about when you go to work. Let's imagine that you work in an office and you go and you turn your computer on when you first arrive. It makes a noise. What's it telling you? That it's coming to life. Now, it depends on which system you have. You could probably flick the power button and go make coffee and go and hang out for a bit with friends and then come back and hopefully it's up and running by then. Others of us, we just turn our systems on and they're right there, but that's for a different conversation. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, Apple fans, computer fans. We understand that the noise it makes is saying, hey, listen, this is something's happening here, right? Let's think about this. Think about your debit card. Okay? How many of you use tap? Let's just be honest here. That's a moment of confession. How many of you use tap? Yeah, some of us use tap. Some of you don't use tap. But what is one beep telling you when you go tap, one beep? It's actually telling you it's in process. And then you stand there waiting, anticipating to see if you have enough money and to see if you get approved, right? What does two beeps mean? Two beeps means now you got to insert it. Right? Now you got to put the card in, you got to put the code in, and then you got to wait again. It slows down the process, right? These beeps, these dings, they're telling us something. What does it mean when your teenager texts you back? Some of you are like, I'm not sure. It's proof that there is a God when a teenager texts you back. I have my youngest son just turned 21 on Friday, and he never texts us back. And so, sorry, parents of teenagers, there's no hope. Even after teenage years, they still don't text you back. These noises, these chirps, these dings. A few weeks ago, my wife and I were sitting around our kitchen table, and we were enjoying dinner together, just the two of us, and which happens quite often these days. We just get to spend some time chatting, talking, and I've after almost 28 years of marriage, I've figured out it's very wise to leave my phone on the counter, not to have it beside me on the table. And my phone was over on the counter, and it made this sonar noise. And my wife looked at me. She said, what was that? And I said, well, it's my WhatsApp letting me know that the conversation is still going, and we're having, you know, these people are answering and so on and so forth. And it was this sonar. See, when we think about it, the technology, the beeps, the dings, the buzzes, the bells, whatever it may be, they're trying to tell us something. They're trying to get our attention. They're notifying us of something. Something's going on. Something's happening. Now, for some of us, when those things happen, what do? We quickly grab our device and we find out what is actually going on and who's communicating and what do I need to know and where do I need to be and all that. But there are sometimes, though, if you think about it, that these beeps, dings, noises sometimes become the background noise of our lives. That they're just there. When I listened to this talk show host talk about it, I never looked at it this way before. It never even crossed my mind. They're just background noise. They're just part of our lives. Now, as I thought about that, as I started reflecting on Easter, and you're wondering, what in the world, what's the connection between these two things, I began realizing this. For some of us, Easter has simply become the background noise of our lives. It's just there, right? We go through the weekend and we get the chocolate-covered bunnies and we do the egg hunts and we see the Easter sales and we have time with family and you got to put up with the crazy aunt that nobody wants to be around, but, you know, everyone's patient and kind and gracious. And you just do all these things. And what happens is you end up moving through Easter, and not that those things are bad or wrong, especially if you're the crazy aunt. It's not bad or wrong. But it just becomes background noise. And before you know it, it's just another long weekend, right? You get an extra day off from work. You don't have to be, you don't have to check in. It's great. But here's the thing that struck me about this is that Easter is actually notifying us of something. That it doesn't have to be background noise. That there is something happening in the celebration of Easter that's trying to get our attention. It's trying to make us aware of something. It's trying to direct us. It's trying to ding in our hearts and our souls as a notification. For the next few minutes, I want to take you to a moment in Jesus' life after he resurrected, after he walked out of the tomb. I want to take you to a moment where he interacts with one of his early followers on the seashore of the Sea of Galilee, on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. I want to take you to that moment, but before I get there, I need to set it up for you because everything about Easter is telling us something. See, they're post-resurrection. There's this things going on that people are trying to fit the pieces together of what's actually going on. See, there's confusion and chaos. If we back it up a few days, you begin to realize is that there was this awareness of Jesus. There was people that were praising Jesus. He came riding into Jerusalem on a donkey, and they were worshiping him. And then a few short days later, the crowds are screaming, crucify him. And so people heard this and saw this. They experienced this. They heard the nails being pounded into his hands and into his feet. They saw the beating that he took. They saw his open, wounded back. They saw the crown of thorns on his head. They saw him die on a cross, and they saw his body taken down and put in a tomb. And now what's happening is he's alive. He's no longer dead, and this message is beginning to kind of get out there a little bit, and people are starting to wonder what is going on. We went from a sense of hopelessness now to this truth that the tomb is empty. Now what do we do? And so the early followers, disciples, are trying to put it all together. They're trying to figure it out because Jesus just keeps showing up. He just keeps appearing and interacting with people. And so, for us, we read stories like this about Jesus, and we get the advantage of seeing the full story. The early followers, they didn't have the full story. It wasn't laying out for them. They were trying to put it together. And so there's this moment where the disciples are at the Sea of Galilee, and they're like trying to figure it out. They're like so confused, and we saw him dead, now he's alive. What do we do with this? And so the disciples do something that's familiar to them. They actually go fishing. They were fishermen by trade, and so they did something that was very, very familiar to them. And so they go out on the Sea of Galilee in the night, and they begin fishing. And it's in this crazy moment where they're fishing that something begins to unfold. Let me read it for you. John chapter 21, verse 4, it says, "At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, 'Fellows, have you caught any fish?' 'No,' they replied," which is proof that there is honest fishermen out there. I mean, just these guys are honest, right? "Then he said, 'Throw out your net on the right side of the boat and you will get some.' So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, 'It's the Lord.' When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, jumped in the water, and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards out. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire, and some bread." Okay, so this is an awesome moment. I mean, probably you didn't realize that Jesus was a chef, but he is. He's cooking breakfast here. What you need to understand that this moment sounds nice. It sounds like really pleasant. You can almost feel the crackles, or you can almost hear the crackling fire. You can feel the warmth. You can smell the smoke, the beautiful, the calmness of the early morning. You can kind of feel this, but there's tension in the air. There's tension between Jesus and Peter. See, a few days prior to this moment, Peter actually does something that kind of creates distance between himself and Jesus. As Jesus was being led away to be put on trial and then eventually hang on the cross, Peter told Jesus, "Jesus, I'm in. I'm your man. I'm there for you. I'll support you. I'll go to the grave for you. I will die for you. Jesus, I'm in. You don't have to worry about me. You can count on me." What you need to know is that in the moment, in the heat of the moment, when the pressure was on, Peter actually denies Jesus 3 times. 3 times he denies even knowing him. He's standing around a fire getting warm, and someone looks at him and said, "Hey, aren't you with those guys? Aren't you with Jesus?" No eye contact, right? Second time, "Aren't you with Jesus?" And he's like, "No, I'm not with Jesus." Third time, "Aren't you with Jesus?" He's like, "No, I'm not." And he gets upset and he gets angry at this moment. See, Peter knows what has happened. Have you ever said something, made a promise and never followed through? Have you ever given your word and not fallen through? You know what this feels like, right? It feels kind of awkward. Because you know within yourself you didn't follow through. Peter in this moment sees Jesus. And he gets in the water and rushes to him. Now, what's most interesting about this is that Jesus just kind of carries on. They have their breakfast, they eat the fish and the bread, and it's just kind of, I don't know what's going on in that moment. Maybe there's a bit of awkward silence. Maybe they're not sure what's going on. But then Jesus steps into the moment and he speaks to the elephant in the room. He actually speaks directly to Peter. Look at verse 15. It says, "After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' 'Yes, Lord,' Peter replied. 'You know I love you.' 'Then feed my lambs,' Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' 'Yes, Lord,' Peter said. 'You know I love you.' 'Then take care of my sheep,' Jesus said. A third time he asked him, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me?' Peter's hurt at this point. 'Yes, Jesus,' he answers the question the third time. He says, 'You know I love you. You know everything about me.' Then Jesus said, 'Feed my sheep.'" Now, what is interesting here is, and if some of you are following the pattern of three, you know exactly what is going on here. Jesus understands this simple truth that Peter has denied him 3 times. And so Jesus steps into the moment and asks him 3 times if he loves him. See, what Jesus is doing in this moment between him and Peter is he's restoring Peter. See, for Peter and Jesus, there was a gap. There was a gap in their relationship. There was a gap from what he said he would do and what he actually did. There was distance between those two things. And Jesus addresses the gap in Peter's life. As I reflected on that this week, and as I was pondering that, I began to realize is that, oh my goodness, Peter is me. Peter is us. Peter is you. Because every single one of us have a gap in our lives. We have that overwhelming sense of the void or the emptiness. We have that overwhelming sense of the gap when we say one thing and do another. We have a gap in how we portray ourselves, maybe in our social media feed, to how current reality is and how it really is in our lives. For some of us, we have a gap in our marriages. What started out as beautiful and vibrant and alive is now loveless and distant and drifting. And there's this gap. For some of us, we know the gap when it comes to relationships. We know what the gap is when it comes to friendships. We know what the gap is even within ourselves. And for some, we recognize there's a gap between us and God. But here's the interesting thing about the gap is that when we're aware of it, what often happens is we go into gap management mode. Have you ever thought about this? We get into this space where we try to manage the gap, right? So we try to fill the gap up with things so that the gap volume goes down a little bit so that it's not as loud in our ears. And so what we do is we sort of fill in the gap. We try to maybe fill it in with our busyness, right? If we could just be super busy and our calendar looks super full and we look super important, then maybe the gap will get a little bit smaller. Or maybe if I could just be a little bit more disciplined. Wouldn't it be great if we could just be a bit more disciplined? Or maybe if I could just be a little bit more religious. If I could just do that, then maybe the gap will fill in. Or maybe we try to do other things very practically. Maybe we fill it in with binge watching Netflix. Some of you just look down. I'm one of those people now. I used to judge people who binge watch Netflix. Now I'm up to my eyeballs watching it. Anyone into Broadchurch? No. That went right off the edge of the stage. Here's the thing. Those things aren't bad. The things in our lives aren't wrong. Where it crosses the line for us is those times and those moments when we try to do gap management, when we think it's actually going to fulfill us, that it's going to complete us. See, Peter understood the gap all too well. His gap was filled with pain. It was filled with sorrow. It was filled with distance. It was anger and bitterness and all the other things that go along with those moments in his life. And he's dealing with it. He's holding on to it. And what I love about what Jesus does in this moment when he walks out of the tomb and he begins appearing to his disciples, he appears to Peter and he addresses it for him. He restores him. See, this Easter season notification is this. Not only did Jesus hang on the cross in the gap between ourselves and God, when he walked out of the tomb, he says, I have given victory over the gap so that the gap no longer has to define you. See, I think Peter was being defined by his gap. He was living out of the gap, and it was putting more distance between himself and others and between God and between Jesus. And it's this moment where Jesus steps into it. He says, listen, I've conquered the gap. I want to give you victory over the gap. You don't have to worry about the gap. I've stepped into it. Now, for some of us, it's like, okay, you got to give me clarity on the gap thing, right? You got to help me understand what the gap is, because it can be defined in so many different ways, but I want to give you a simple three-letter word for gap, and it's the word sin. I know we don't like talking about sin, and it's almost politically incorrect to use the word these days, but it's true. There's this reality in all of us that the gap is defined by sin, that there's this brokenness in all of us. There's a verse in Romans chapter 3, verse 23, it talks about all of us, every single one of us, having this thing called sin, and every single one of us falling short of the glory of God. That means that we fall short of the holiness and the perfection of God, that there is nothing that we can do to attempt to fill the gap on our own, because we just can't accomplish that. But Jesus comes along and he shows us this moment where he says, I want to step into it because I want to take care of this for you. I want to take care of those past moments in your life that you're reflecting on. I want to take care of those things. I want to take care of the present, and I also want to take care of your future. See, that's what he did for Peter. And that's what he wants to do for us. I think this moment between Jesus and Peter is so powerful, because not only is it the restoration that he steps into for Peter and showing us the same for us, is that he offers Peter peace and power. You know, I wonder if Peter was longing for peace in that sense of brokenness. And Jesus comes along and says, I've taken care of this for you. Have my peace. He comes into this moment and says, I want to give you power to live life and live it to the full. See, I wonder how many of us would look at our lives and just say, oh man, I just long for a sense of peace in my heart and soul. There's so much confusion and chaos. I long for a power to live this life that's before me. See, the same power that raised Jesus from the grave is the same power that's available to every single one of us now. Same power. It's the power that conquered sin and death. It's the power that gives us life. It's the power that makes us right with God and brings peace. This is the moment between Jesus and Peter that changed everything. It redefined Peter in this moment. It gave him a new path to walk on. And as I think about that truth and as I reflect upon it this Easter season, I realize that something that Peter did in this moment, we need to pay attention to, and it's when he got out of the boat. I don't know if you're reflecting on that when I mentioned it, but it's so interesting. When he understood that it was Jesus on the shore, he jumps in the water and goes to Jesus, because I wonder if Peter knew the simple truth that Jesus was the only one that could take care of this for him, that he is the only one who would restore him. He gets out of the boat and he goes to shore. And he sits around a different kind of fire. The first fire was a fire of denying knowing Jesus. The second fire was nourishment and restoration for his soul. You know, this moment I love because Jesus shows us once again the power of what he wants to do for each and every one of us. That in his eagerness to show Peter his love, he went to him. He didn't have to. He didn't need to go to Peter and restore him. He could have just left him to his own merit and say, you can take care of it yourself, but not Jesus. Jesus doesn't do that. He goes to him and offers him grace and forgiveness and mercy in a moment when Peter didn't deserve it. But Jesus says, I give it to you. As we close our service today and as the band comes, I want to ask you something. I want to ask you, will you consider getting out of your boat that you're in? Will you consider this idea of maybe it's time that you get out of the boat that you're in, that boat that you called safety, that boat that is convenient, that boat that has just been your comfort zone? Will you just get out of the boat and recognize that Jesus is the one who walked out of that tomb that first Easter Sunday morning? And that he comes to you today and he offers you something that you don't deserve. He offers you grace and forgiveness. And more importantly, he offers you love. He offers you a love that is so extravagant that we as human beings can hardly fathom. That it is his love that raised him from the tomb that brought him into this space to say, I loved you enough that I conquered the gap. I can give you victory in the gap. So this Easter season, I ask you this question. Will you get out of the boat and trust him that he is the one that wants to show you a love that is so extravagant that can change everything? Listen to this song. If you can stand, let's stand together. You know, this morning, I know for some of us, this might be some new thought, some new truth. And my prayer all week has been is that some of us would come to that place of putting our trust in Jesus. To recognize that he's walked out of that tomb on behalf of us to give us victory. That is love. If you've put your trust in him today, I want you to do something. We have a website, myfcn.church. And what you can do is you can click a button there. It says, I've trusted Jesus. And it will give you some next steps that you can take. Or if you've got questions or if you've got, you know, some other things that you're dealing with, we would love to walk with you. You can even set up a coffee with one of our pastors and we'd love to sit down with you and talk through these things. It's a powerful thing for us to recognize that Easter is a notification for our hearts, our souls, and our minds that there is a God who loves us so deeply that he sent his son for us. I hope that this truth becomes your truth. We're going to start this brand new series next week called Everything Changes. You're going to get this card. I don't know if you're connected to a church or not, but I want to invite you back next week as we explore these at a deeper level in a way which will hopefully make sense for all of us to lean into these things, because it truly does change everything. I invite you back next week for 10 a.m. We only have one service next week, so be aware of that for 10 a.m. Let me say a prayer. God, we thank you for this morning, and we thank you for being able to gather in this place so freely. We thank you that for this beautiful truth that we've been able to celebrate, that the tomb is empty. God, I pray that you would take these truths and you would modify them for us in a way that would penetrate our hearts for where we are in our understanding of you. Draw us closer to the truth. Help us to have a clear mind and hearts and souls about these things. God, as we leave this place, many of us are going to be going into a busy afternoon and an evening. God, I pray that you would help us to take a moment or two to reflect, to remind ourselves of this extravagant love that you have for us. We give this to you. We thank you for this. In Jesus' name, amen. Happy Easter, everybody.